Okay, hello, welcome.
Good.
We're almost done. We basically will be finished up today, God willing, getting ready for the CM next week. That's the Hashem. And I was, either we'll finish more or less today, except for the last verse or two, and we might have a review next week, a short review of the whole book of Shmuel. I thought it would be nice to just, like, kind of review of the, anybody remember when we started? How long ago it was?
Over a year.
Is it over a year?
Okay.
Well, okay.
Is it really? How can that be?
Time goes by fast when you're having fun. But you'll want to get a hold of your Book of Kings for the
right. For a week. Eleanor was ready and prepared.
Yes, I was here last week, and I thought that we were starting, so I brought that one.
Okay. So we're in chapter 24. In the previous chapter, I just wanted to mention, we went through the list of David HaMelech's close advisors and generals and officers, and we talked about the importance of delegating and having other people on board. we talked a little bit about the Ben Ish Chai, the Ben Yehoyada, who I mentioned in the next book, he's going to be Shlomo HaMelech's, one of his main men. And we mentioned the great Sephardic Kabbalist, the Ben Ish Chai, who, when he went to his grave, was inspired by the, felt that he was a chip off the block or somehow some connection to the Ben Ish Chai. We talked about what it means to be the son of a living person. How can you be the son of a dead person? And he said that there's some people that live and there are others that really live. In other words, they're lively, they have a lot of accomplishments, a lot of things. And then we talked about, most people are afraid of lions and they're afraid of the cold. Have you ever stand in front of like a swimming pool when the water's really cold? They're waiting for the brave person to jump in. And so he's described as not being afraid of a lion and not being afraid of breaking the ice and jumping in. That's a certain kind of strength, not afraid of anything. And then even we talked about David HaMelech's men, how they broke through enemy lines to get something for their king. It gives us an idea of the, their loyalty to David. David didn't really request it. He could have requested it. He didn't. He wouldn't send people on a suicide mission. But in order to please him, they were willing to do it. And David didn't want to encourage people to take risks for the king that were unnecessary or not needed. And he poured that water out as a sacrifice or as a water pouring kind of offering. And that was all mentioned. The one kind of surprise that we mentioned was that on the previous list, it finished off by mentioning Uriah as being one of King David's officers, and he was the husband of Bathsheba. The fun thing that people do is they try to figure out the number in chapter 23 of how he came up with 37. If you count them, it doesn't exactly work out to 37. And you have to assume that they knew how to count, right? See, if we can count, they can count. So where are the missing ones? So there's different views about where the missing ones are. Some people, when they list, let's see if I can find that, where it says the... Right, well, that's counting from there, and that it lists more, but the numbers don't work out. In other words, if you... it could be that some of the triumvirates, where they didn't list all three, and so if you add them, there, the different commentators have it a different ways of seeing it. The by one of them, it uses the word... Let me see, that sons, and they understood that that could have been several of them, that are instead of listing them as one... let's see if I could find that. See, it doesn't list Yoav either, and we know that he was there, and so there's a little bit of room to play around with the structure to try to fit in, to figure out the 37, how we would get to that number.
The sons of Jashon.
That's it. Which verse is that?
It's 32, but it also lists two names.
So some people feel that there's more than those two.
Oh, okay.
On that's on 32. Yeah, it says, It says Al Yakfa and Al Ishvoni, and then it says Bnei Yashan. So some people learn that the sons of Yashan were actually there. Those would be the he had six sons, and that would make up the list. That's the way Rashi has it. But there are a few different ways to put the list together. Again, some people, not some, we all enjoy a puzzle, but it's a different kind of study to sit and, you know, it's a kind of Talmudic kind of thing to list all the names that we know of and the different threes and the possibilities how to, but there's about three or four different ways to come up with the 37. I even saw one view that when he said Uriah that he couldn't continue because of what happened with Uriah, you know, that David was embarrassed or that he didn't complete the list. It's just interesting that how we come up with that exact number, and that's a legitimate if you want to play with it and see how, you know, how you would, if you were drawing a chart to see if you would come up with 37 or how to come up with that, that's a legitimate form of study, and there are a lot of interesting ways to get there. Okay. 24. But Yosef af Hashem l'charis b'Yisrael. God's angry with the Jewish people. Another time, again, he's angry with the Jewish people. Why is he angry with the Jewish people? And it doesn't even tell us why he's angry with the Jewish people. Rashi over here says, Lo Yadati, I have no idea why God's angry with us. it's not clear from the verse. And that's a big challenge. Sometimes you do something wrong and you don't know why is everyone so angry with me. What'd I do? There are other views about what we might have done. One view is that the Jewish people didn't support David HaMelech. They allowed his son to rebel against him. And they we're going to see that they joined the rebellion of you know, you have to be loyal to your monarch. You have to be loyal to your king. And in other words, he gives his life up for you. He risks his life in battle to save the Jewish people. And so you have to stick with him and not just every time someone else comes along and says, I'll lower your taxes. Okay, we'll go with him. You know, there has to be a certain amount of loyalty to. And so some people say that the anger over here was this lack of loyalty to David HaMelech. That's why Hashem was angry.
This is a little going back to last week. I'm sorry to digress, but I'm very puzzled about why the Hashmoneim didn't designate kingship to tribe of Judah. I mean, once they saved the people, why weren't they intelligent enough to see that they had to, you know, designate the proper people to the throne and so on? Like David designated all these different people, but the Hashmoneim, they took the kingship and they were Kohanim. And they
Either they didn't think they found the proper people, or they just, certain people have trouble designating other people. They have trouble letting go of the power, or it's difficult to know. It seemed kind of obvious to us, you know, but at the time they felt they could do it all. There are times where if people would do certain things good, they would be wonderful, and instead they take on too much, and they don't even do the things that they could have done. And so you could see it that way. In other words, they wanted to be the Kohanim and the kings, and they took on too much.
So that's a real character flaw, isn't it?
It's from a good point. You know, those people that want to do it all, they're great people. We could use some of them, but they just, you need somebody who has the common sense to say, well, maybe you're taking on too much, and let's focus on these things, and, you know, do this, and don't get sick, and don't stretch yourself too thin. And then there are other people that do stretch themselves too thin, and they don't accomplish nearly as much in life as they could have if they had focused on certain. So, the other thing that some commentators say is that the Jewish people didn't want to build the Beit HaMikdash. They weren't focused on spiritual things. David was. David kept begging God, now it's time for the. So Hashem was angry with the Jewish people that we weren't focused on spiritual things. Sometimes we're focused on, very easy to be focused on physical, you know, I want a new car, I want a new house, I want a nice, I want to redecorate, but we need to focus on spiritual things. That needs to be our problem. In other words, what can we do to make me more spiritual? So some people say that this was why Hashem was angry. When Hashem wants to punish someone, sometimes what he does is he causes the leader to make a mistake, And then that mistake is going to cost the people, and that's what happens over here. So, Vayosef Hashem, Hashem got angry with him, Vayosef says David. And because of that, he convinced David to make a mistake. David isn't punished for this mistake. Sometimes a leader makes bad judgment because that's what the people deserve. So, Leimor, Leik Manes Yisrael, he says, go and count Jews. Go and count the Jewish people. So we have a very interesting thing. I've never run across this in other religions or other faiths, but we don't count people. We don't like to count one, two, three, like in point of people. And that's always, we believe there are different reasons for it, but the Torah, there's a mitzvah not to count people. One of the reasons are that we don't believe people are numbers. They're not statistics. Each person is a whole world. So we don't just say, well, you're just like all the others. You're just another number. We don't believe in that. We believe that the whole world may be here just for what's going on in one person's life. It says that's why Hashem created the world with Adam and Eve, with two people. Really started off just with Adam, because we don't really need the rest of the world for, in other words, for each and every one of us, our struggles are really enough. We're not just another number. We're not inconsequential. It's the 2 billion Chinese. He doesn't know. No, each person, sometimes we get frustrated. We feel the rest of the world's not doing what they're supposed to. The focus is on us. In other words, Hashem looks at each one of us, and each one of us has the potential to change the mankind and the history of life, and it's really the individual. And when you start counting numbers and you make a person a statistic and say, well, it's just another number, another person, another this, who cares? You know, it's not so. We don't give numbers to people. We don't make people into numbers. And so that typically we avoid counting. And there are other reasons why counting leads a person to focus on numbers. And numbers are deceiving. Our strength has never been in numbers. We have invisible strength. In other words, if we worked on numbers, I mean, how many Arabs are there compared to the number of Jews? How many tanks? And it's like accepted that there's got to be, you know, 10 Arab tanks for every Jewish tank and 10, you know, planes. If you count numbers, you lose focus. And battle after battle, they're not won by the most numerous. It's not a numbers game. And so the kings are told not to focus on the numbers. Now, with that said, you have to be practical. Sometimes you need to get a count. And so we have various methods that were used. In the times of Shaul, he had everybody take a sheep, and then they counted the sheep. In Shaul, they have a secret method for counting people if you want to see if you have a minion. There's a famous verse in Tehillim called Hoshea Es Amecha, which has 10 words. And so when sometimes you walk into a shul, they go, Hoshea Es Amecha, whoops, I didn't finish that. And there's other people have cute different things that are exactly 10 of to figure out if we have 10 or we don't have 10. But we don't like to get into numbers games. We don't like to. If we would do that, there's so many times in history we'd say, well, we're so few, we might as well give up. You know, but we're not into the numbers game. But sometimes we do focus on the numbers, and the numbers get us depressed, and we only have X number of children, or we only have X number of members, or we only have X. If you look at it that way, then you refuse to recognize the greatness of the individual. So David, though, got this mishigas, so to speak. He was convinced to do something. And this is what, then he went ahead and he did it. Yomai melech ha-yom sarachayil. So he called in his chief administrator. Now, when you want to do something and make sure it gets done, you get Yoav to do it, because people didn't mess with Yoav. It's interesting, like he could have called a bureaucrat, but then maybe it wouldn't have gotten done. He knew that, especially over here where some people didn't want to do it, so he says, he called him, he said, Shut Nebuchol Shifti Israel, Medana Beersheba, I want you to go amongst all the tribes, and Dan until Beersheba, Paktu Esam, Beidat Es Misraam, and count everybody, and then you'll know the numbers. Sometimes to know numbers, it's a private thing. You have to have access. People have to trust you. So he entrusted Yoav to do the job. Verse 3. And when a king calls you in and asks you to do something, usually you listen. But over here, Yoav wants to get out of the job. He recognizes right away that it's not the right way to go. Yoav Elamelech V'yosef Hashem Elokecha Esa'am Kehem Kehem Me'apamim. Numbers also mean that this is all that's here. And when a person wants a blessing, he doesn't want to. When you put a number on something, it's limiting. And we hope that the Jewish people will be unlimited. So he says, I hope God blesses us 100 times what we have. Why should we limit ourselves to our numbers? He says, I'm not challenging you. I'm not, even though I work for you and you're the boss, my Melech, the king, but why do you have this? Why do you want to do this? In other words, he's saying very respectfully, I don't like this idea. You know, what do we need it for? We should have many more times what's the purpose of this? Verse 4. The king was more forceful than Yoav, and the other officers. They were given the job, so it's only so far you can argue with the monarch, the supreme, absolute dictatorship monarch. If he says you're going to count the people, you're going to count the people. Now, the interesting thing is that Yoav at other times was able to force the king's hand, you know, when he was forceful enough, we saw on occasion, but over here, the king won out. Verse 5, they went over to the Jordan and they came to the people. They went to these different places. They went to Sidon. They went the north and the south and the east and the west. Verse 7, now there were Jews living in Gentile cities. They went to these different cities and it's interesting that people are always trying to count the number of Jews in Russia, you know, the former Soviet Union, and when they opened up and allowed people to immigrate, people thought they were the last Jews of that area, and soon they'd be replaced by other groups. In other words, there was always the last group out. Then there'd be another group, and the Jews are coming out of the woodwork in the former Soviet Union, and they're like communities that are developing. Same thing is true in Poland and in Hungary, and whenever they think they have the last Jew, they find new people. A lot of it is that during the war years, people hid their identities, and a lot of them were blended into the general population, sometimes it's hard to find, to count everybody. You think you have them all, there'll always be more. Even today you find that sometimes you think you know everybody, and then you run into people and, oh, he's Jewish? Oh, I never told, we had a funny story. On Shabbos, one of the kids left something on that we didn't want to leave on all Shabbos. We thought it might be, they left on like a fryer kind of thing there. And we're afraid that the oil might get a fire, so we wanted to get a non-Jew to turn it off because we thought it might be dangerous. So the kids went, we have like college kids next door. And so we got a college kid to turn it off and this and that. And my one of my sons went over, explained it to him, everything. And then on the way out, he wishes us good yontif. So it's like, maybe he was Jewish all this time and we don't know. Like, we didn't, he said he understood what it was and he would help us, and he didn't say I was Jewish, we didn't, when he said good yontif, it was like, But you never know, there are Jews everywhere. It's hard, it's a difficult job to count them and figure out who they're, there's always more work to do, is the point. You find them so they went to Negev Beersheba, Shuta v'kol eretz v'yavu mikseh tisha chadash. It took them 9 months and 21 days, and then they came back to Yerushalayim. Verse 9, v'yiten Yoav es mispor mifkad ha'am el melech. And Yoav brought the number to the king, Beti Yisrael, and this is the number. And it seems like the people they counted were the people who would be eligible for the draft, people that could potentially fight, in a time of war, able-bodied men. So the amount he came up with was Shmona Meis Elef, 800,000, Ishkayel, healthy men, Shalof Cherev, people that were capable of bearing a sword. The Ish Yehuda, and the men of Yehuda were Chamesh Meis Elef Ish, were 500,000. Now, what's interesting is that Yehuda was one tribe, and these were the other 11 tribes, and yet Yehuda was quite a bit. Yehuda did have a tradition of being very strong warriors and very strong leaders, and so a high percentage of them would be capable of military service. In other words, even though they were older and they were more active. Later on, when the country split up, it was basically Yehuda against the 10 tribes. And so even at this stage where we're all together, Yehuda was always counted separately. Which is just interesting that Yehuda was in a category by itself. The people of Yehuda, they were like the one man of Yehuda was like equal to three of the other. The Yehuda was the lion. He was the head of the tribes. He was willing to, there was just a much higher number of the tribes. You find that Levi, for example. Was not counted because the tribe of Levi was doing the temple service. They were in God's legion, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Binyamin was mostly wiped out in the Civil War, so there was very few from Binyamin. So now we're down to nine tribes to one, so helps a little bit, but it's still so interesting the numbers, how so many more were in the tribe of Yehuda than the others.
What civil war are you speaking about?
In the end of the Book of Kings, we had the War of Pelegish Begiva with the tribe of Binyamin, where they had the man with the concubine. Mm-hmm. So that was the big civil war. So verse 10, V'yach Lev David Oso. Now this is important to have a leader with a conscience. You know, if a leader, sometimes it says that David's heart hit him. You know, we always say, you know, in Shemona Esrei, when everybody, there's a part in the silent prayer where we go like this, you know, where we hit our hearts, and really our heart is supposed to hit us. In other words, it's David's heart hit him. He began to feel bad. After, unfortunately, that's the way it is. Sometimes when someone does something wrong, it doesn't hit them till afterwards. Oh, what did I do? So David realized that he had done something wrong. It occurred to him as the numbers were coming in, I shouldn't have done that. Now this is an important thing to us, which is, we find this earlier as well, all people make mistakes. Making mistakes is not a reason to fire a person, I guess it depends on how often they make the mistakes and what mistakes they make. But the fact that somebody makes a mistake is not, people are not perfect. We always have to know that nobody is perfect, and humans do make mistakes no matter who they are. But the question is whether they admit their mistakes and whether they learn from their mistakes. So one of the hallmarks of David was that he admitted his mistakes. So David's, this happened. So first of all, David himself feels guilty, and V'yomer David Hashem Chatasi, I sinned. And he says Ma'od. He doesn't hide it. He doesn't cover it up. He doesn't say. He says I made a big one. This was a big one. He doesn't hide. So that's important for us. Important character trait too. We find that Shaul HaMelech was too perfect. He didn't. When he did something wrong, he didn't want to admit that he did something wrong. He's got, you know, God said, you know, the prophet came to him and said, you know, why didn't you destroy Amalek? And he said, oh, Baruch Hashem, I did everything. Was it the sound of the sheep? Which sheep? You know, like he didn't, it took him a while to really admit his sin, that he had done something wrong. It's certain people, it's too hard for them to see their own faults. They just don't, they're not willing to examine themselves. They're not willing to look into themselves. There's a whole study of Musar, of ethics, where we look always to realize that we make mistakes, and that's part of the Yom Kippur process. There's nobody who gets doesn't have to say I'm sorry and clap the alchay. Like every single Jew gets up there and says I've done this, I've done that. We all make mistakes, and that process of being willing to look at what we've done and try to fix our mistakes, that's important. It's important to realize that, you know, we forget things, we make mistakes. And so that's David HaMelech says to Hashem Chatasi, I made a big mistake. Sisi v'ata Hashem, even no savon avdecha. And he says, please forgive me. Ki niskalti miod, I was very foolish. Boy, that was I should have known that. And verse 11, V'yachon David boker dvar Hashem hayo al gad hanavi chozeh David leimor. So David woke up in the morning, and the prophet came to him first thing. In other words, David prayed that sometimes if a sin isn't punished, you never know when that'll come back to haunt you. If the person's done something wrong, the person is better off dealing with it. So David knew that he had done something wrong. He knew there was an anger of Hashem, And Hashem's anger sometimes waits for the right moment or a sin to punish us. So now that they had counted the people, they were eligible for this punishment, so to speak. So David prayed to Hashem to forgive him. So the prophet came to him saying, verse 12, Holakwidi Barti, O David, call my Hashem, go and speak to David. Doesn't call him King David, by the way. Says, go and speak to David. Hashem's pretty angry with him if he just calls him David. Go speak to David. He says, Kol Amar Hashem, Shalosh Ano Ino Elecha. He says, I'll give you a choice. Very interesting how Hashem gives us choices like that. I'll give you a choice. Bachol Ha'aretz Mehen Be'es Elecha. I'll give you a pick your punishment. Choose your poison. Let's see what Hashem says to him. V'yavar Gad Adav V'yagol Emor Tavo Lach Sheva Shanim Rav. Well, if you want, you could have 7 years of famine. Or if you want, you can have im shlosha kadashim misachol nezeracha, 3 months of defeat in war, v'huvrot fecha, and you'll be on the run. V'im hayosh shlosh yame, or if you want, you can have 3 days of plague, 3 days of a plague, and each one. But so that's the choice. Ata, now you know. Da urei ma ashiv shlocha. Tell me what your answer will be. You could think about it. You got three options. Now, it's interesting, like we would try to figure out, well, famine, can we survive a famine? Can we put away enough food? People die of starvation, it's very painful. Defeat in war, there are a lot of deaths, people lose faith. They have that for 3 months, you know, all the gains that we've made, people will be captured, that's a terrible thing. A plague, on the other hand, is terrible, and people would die. A lot of huge numbers die in a plague. So which thing would you choose? So it's very interesting what David's response is. Verse 14, and again, it shows his faith. Vayomar David, oh God, sar limio. David tells, this is a terrible choice you got to make here. Like, you know, it's you can't win with these choices. He says, it's terrible, I'm in bad, very bad straight. But he says, Nifil na biyat Hashem. I would much rather fall in the hands of Hashem. I would rather pick a punishment that deals directly with Hashem, ki rabim rachamav, because Hashem has lots of mercy. And even when there's a bad decree, it can always change. Hashem, we have a concept that Hashem is merciful, and tshuva tefila tzedakah, with tshuva and tefila tzedakah, a person can always change a bad decree. Hashem is the best one to deal with is with Hashem. Lubiyat Adam Alpha, the humans, people, they can be very cruel. If it's up to a person in war, or if there's food, certain people will hoard the food and they won't give it to others, and don't want to rely on people, much rather rely on Hashem. And if it comes from Hashem directly, there's this idea that that when we want to deal as directly as possible with Hashem, because we know that's real mercy. 15. Hashem, so that was David's choice. So Hashem brought a plague on the Jewish people. Mabokavad Eis Moed, and the morning until the set time. Now this actually it was not 3 days. It was actually better. Like Hashem was merciful. And the plague, now sometimes a plague only strikes in one region, a plague that we would understand, you know, like a plague caused by a disease or something. This plague struck the entire land, from Dan till Beersheba, Sheva Shim Elefish. And 70,000 men were killed, which is a huge number for a small country. Verse 16, Tesai, Yado Hamalach Yushalayim. And the plague, it almost like spread, like they could see like the hand of the plague. They could feel it slowly spreading over the different areas. And it started coming to the capital city, to Yerushalayim, L'shachsa, to destroy it. And at that point, and David was in Yerushalayim, and he was praying, and he was leading the people in prayer. V'inacham Hashem al ara. And Hashem was comforted, or he decided that that was enough. V'yomer la'malach hamash yisbam rav ato. Hashem said, okay, stop. In other words, the plague that was slowly attacking the people was beginning to edge its way towards the Yerushalayim, the heartland, and then Hashem said, that's enough. Harav Yazka, stop. Umalach Hashem im Goren Aron Hayavusi. It's almost like it spread and it reached a certain point, and it comes to stop at a certain point. They saw the angel of death hovering above. I don't know if it was like a cloud. I don't know if they were like people in a line dying, but it stopped. They could clearly see. It was almost like they were in the city, and slowly, slowly, they felt the plague coming closer and closer and closer. And just when it hit, it seemed to stop at a certain farm. And it's very interesting. This was a farm owned by a Gentile. They call it a threshing floor. When they bring in grain, they have to separate the wheat from the chaff. It's like the husk or whatever. And so they have different methods of stomping or banging on the wheat or throwing it up in the wind. And it's like a big, wide-open area, big field. So that's where the plague stopped. So verse 17. And David could see this angel. He saw this angel of death spread out. He had spiritual vision. He saw this angel. And Chazal say this terrified David, that when he saw this angel coming to David got the shivers, that he never fully recovered from that. In his old age, he had this. When a person experiences that, sees the angel of death eye to eye, that's a... sometimes people come in contact with death like that, they're never the same. They gray, and it's a shock. In other words, when a person has that close of a call, usually people see the angel of death before they die. That's like the last vision in Lent. So when living people come that close where they see that angel, that meant that it was a near-death experience. And so David saw that angel. V'yama hinei anochi chatasi. Now, David, he wants to blame it on himself. He's the king, and he's trying to convince Hashem to be merciful, and he's saying, don't give them the blame. If you remember when his son Avshalom was rebelling against him and deserved to be punished and did terrible things, he also wanted to take the blame. He's the opposite of today's leaders, where they blame someone else. Not my fault, someone else did. He says, my fault. Don't blame them, blame me. Why should the people suffer? That's what he was praying to Hashem. Anochi katasi, anochi visi. These are the sheep, the flocks. What have they done? Leave the masses alone. Dina yad kabi uveisabi. Punish me. Punish my father's house. Leave the people alone. Again, that is just such a devotion to the people that David has. And if you learn that the punishment was because they didn't appreciate David HaMelech, so this would have been the sign that, look what kind of monarch you have. He's fighting the angel of death. He sees the angel coming, and he says, don't bother them, bother me. They don't deserve it.
Which sins is he referring to?
Of counting the people.
Oh, it's all that specific law?
Mm-hmm. Now, so the truth is, he made the mistake because of the people. Hashem was angry with the Jewish people and caused him to make the mistake. But he was taking he wanted to take the punishment. He said that it's my fault. Punish me, punish my father's house, but spare the flock.
If someone were to say that today, all the psychologists would say, there's something wrong with
you, right? Right, that's right. So, verse 18, V'yavo God el David b'yamu v'yamu lo ale. So, the prophet came to him, and really it was like Hashem accepting his prayer and saying, all right, enough. That's it. We hit a certain spot. That's enough. Hakim Hashem is be'e begorin. Now, we have a similar idea in the Torah where there is a plague, and the plague stops. Like Hashem has Aaron bring the incense. We sometimes, when Hashem has mercy, so we need to note that moment. We need to acknowledge that, we've gone through a process. And so the way of doing that was to bring an offering or to offer incense or to acknowledge that something happened here. And really this wasn't to acknowledge that Hashem could have continued the plague and he was merciful. So he tells to David, he says, bring an altar over here in the granary of Aron Yahayavusi. Now this is an interesting thing. We have this concept in the Torah. There's the idea that when a person sins, they get a plague on the wall. said that when we came into the land of Israel, that if people spoke Lashon Hara and other things, there was a kind of plague that affected the walls of the house. And the wall would turn colors, and you'd have to call the Kohen, and sometimes they condemned the wall. And one of the interesting things was that when they would knock the walls down, occasionally they'd find buried treasure there, because the previous inhabitants of the land buried treasures in the wall. And so the people that were honest, sometimes a person would get a plague on the wall, so somebody that wasn't honest would just put a picture up over the plague, you know, nobody would see it, would try to paint over it. But those that were honest and wanted to do things correctly, they said, Hashem is angry with me, I've sinned. A sin is an opportunity, because we believe that when you fix a sin, you can actually not only fix the sin, but you can get even better than you were to start with. We say that when a person, a Baal Tshuva, is even greater than a person that never sinned. A person that's made a mistake and fixed it is better than somebody, it could even be stronger than a person that never made the mistake. Because when you've made the mistake and you fix it, you're a stronger person because of it. And you in many ways, the momentum that person has can make them very righteous and very, very, very holy. And so if a person had the plague, he did something wrong, but he didn't cover it up. He looked at it, he admitted his mistake, and he knocked it down. He'll find a treasure. And so when a person confronts their mistakes and fixes them, you'll find a treasure. So what's going to happen here is fascinating. The people sinned, David sinned, and until this moment, nobody knew exactly where to build the Beis HaMikdash, where the ideal spot would be for our prayers to be answered. And the Beis HaMikdash is the place where we stop the angel of death. That's the place where life comes. That's where the evil decrees can be thwarted. And so this angel of death that came on Yerushalayim with his sword, and David has this vision, and he sees it slowly, slowly coming, and it stops right over here in the field of Arad Yebusi. Now we know the place where we can stop evil decrees. We know where to pray to. We know, and to this day, the shul faces that spot. Every shul throughout the world faces this spot over here on the threshing floor of Arun HaYavusi, Aronia HaYavusi. And so through that tragedy, it actually developed a positive thing that we learned. Hashem showed us the way, where to pray, where to fix things, where to go to. 19. And David followed the instructions, like he said, and he offered the offering. Now, meanwhile, there's some just interesting things. So the owner of the property was wondering what's going on here. You know, the king of Israel there, and the procession of Yashkev, Aronia. And Aronia, he's looking out and he sees the king over there, and what's going on? They're up in Yara, Samela, Fesavad, of Ovmilav, they're coming there. Yetzer, Aronia, Vishachul, and Melech, Paimarza. He sees the king. Now, he wasn't Jewish. I don't know if this was in Jewish territory. There were non-Jews that were living there. It was near Jewish territory. Verse 20, Yomar Aronia Madua Ba Adonia Melech Alavadav. He says, what do I owe the pleasure of your coming here, sir? Right? What's the Yomar David Liknos Meimcha Es Gagorin? He says, well, I want to buy some real estate over here. I want to make a deal. I want to buy the threshing floor. I believe that's what they call it. Livnos mizbeach Hashem, to build an altar. Betotam gave him alaam. So this is kind of the background of before he made the offering, he wanted to acquire this place. He wanted there to be some permanence, that the Jewish people would not only would it be a temporary thing, but there would always be this place where we could go to stop the angel of death. What's interesting is that there are only a few places in the Torah where the Torah mentions specifically were bought by the Jewish people. One was Hebron, and the other is the Makom HaMikdash. And what are the places that they're giving back, that the Arabs are fighting us for? Yeah. Hebron and the Bay. Those are places that are mentioned in the Torah, the Bible, that the whole world accepts, it's been around, that they were acquired as public property. And they were paid for. It's just interesting, isn't it? How that that those are the, you know, the, so David, he paid for it. He could have seized it. He was a king. We had before, a king has the right to expropriate property. Just ask the government; they can take away property if they wish. Certainly, kings could take away property, but David wished to buy it. He wished to own it. He wished it to be a permanent part of the Jewish people to own that area.
Mm-hmm. But on the in the other occasion too. The Arab said, "Oh, I'll just give it to you. Mm-hmm. You don't have to pay for it."
Yes, isn't that interesting? Right, right. He insisted, "I want to pay for it." Right, right. That's right. It is very interesting, the parallel between this and the Maris and Machpelah.
Yeah. See, there seems to be the idea that this is the place where you could stop the angel of death, but it just happened there that one time. Why? I mean, it might be a memento of that occurrence, but why should it be? This is the place where we'll always stop the angel of death.
There's the idea that there's no coincidence in the Torah, and if it, when something is mentioned as happening at a certain place, that's a sign that's a future concept. And so, if the Torah mentions that this was a place where the angel of death is stopped, and the people that have really strong prayers to offer will make it to the coastal. They'll go there to, that's where they hope to stop the angel of death, where they hope to thwart the, years ago we had the Kohen could offer the incense and could do other things, but this was, even if there was a decree from up above for 3 days and it was agreed, and it could still be changed. 22. V'yomaronia dav yika v'yal adonia melech atobeinuf. He says, here, the king, you can take and you can have, Yadon Melech, to whatever you like, Rea Bakr, La'ola, and you could have the cows for the offering, Famorgim, Mekli Bakr, Leitzim, we got wood here, you can use they had different things for plowing, the plow tools, Hakol Nelson, Aron Yamelech, Melech.
But he mentioned all the things, the cows, the tools.
Yes, yes, yeah, he's trying to make a deal over here. That's right. I'm giving you a lot. This is going to cost you, you'll owe me one. And he said, he understood they were trying to stop the plague. Verse 20, V'yomer HaMelech Aron Yamelech. He said, that's not the way it works. We're not taking a freebie over here. That's going to cost us. There is the idea, we've talked about this a little bit before, that righteous people don't like gifts. We like to pay for what we get. In other words, that you try to acquire things, and he said, we don't want a gift. Look, he kind of acted, I'm gonna pay for it, and I'll pay you a good price. I'm not going to give God a freebie. I'm not going to give him something I took from someone else. If I'm doing an offering, it has to be that I invested in it. It cost me something. I'm happy that it cost me. I'm happy to give something that that has a cost. But Yikin David es Garna, so David acquired the Garna, and then he paid for the Bakr. And it tells us the amount. It's like it's really a good price. But I'm going to stop here so that it can be an official siyum. You can actually read the last verse and then review it. It'll be siyum is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to eat the meal. It's almost like it's a joyous occasion. So that's why I want to save it for next week. So we have that.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.